This podcast is powered by The Plug.
Who's gonna get it out? It ain't even mine to hold, man. Tech ready. Tech that. All we got is our word.
Hello, this is Marisol Solar Therilocker, psychotherapist and consultant. And this is the Resilience and Resistance Podcast, a podcast about successful Black, Indigenous women of color who have overcome trauma and become resilient. Hi, Julie.
Hi. It's so great to be here.
Thank you so much for being a guest on this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm so excited and I'm so proud of all of the work that you have put into this and to like make it all awesome and fancy and apple and egg. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
It does feel fancy, doesn't it? It does.
Yeah, I feel honored. Yeah.
No, I feel honored that you're here. I really appreciate it. So I have known you, or we've known each other for a long time. I think we've run in different circles very peripherally. And so I feel like I know a lot about your life, even though I don't get to spend time with you, which is odd.
Right? And isn't it strange the way in which Denver consistently, like the world gets smaller and smaller the longer that you are in community, right?
Oh my gosh.
You're one of the people who I know is an awesome person, a badass. And yet, like, you know, we need to like...
We need to hang out.
Yeah. You need to find time.
Let's make that happen. Yeah. This is step one. Asking you to be a guest of this podcast is my way of getting you to hang out with me.
Okay, it worked.
So I would love for you just to introduce yourself, how you identify, tell us more about the work that you do and are doing.
Certainly. So I identify as Chicana. I have deep roots here in the land, Southern Colorado, Northern New Mexico. The land that my grandparents live on in Northern New Mexico is actually my great grandmother's dowry. Like,
oh, wow.
We're like old school, like older than dirt Chicanos.
Yeah.
And I came up through, growing up on the border in South Texas and also on the San Carlos Apache Reservation in Arizona. And like those two experiences of living on the res and then living on the border very much shaped my life and my identity of not necessarily experiencing things as a kid, as a young person, and not having a vocabulary to unpack the why or the what of what was actually taking place.
Yeah.
And so I remember, you know, being on the res and having at the little grocery store, there was just like certain types of produce, right? And then going to grocery stores that were not on the reservation and then like seeing like all of the different arrays of choice and not understanding why that was.
Yeah.
Growing up on the border and we moved there in 1993 and seeing the ways in which Border Patrol like had access and free rein to all of the ranches and were able to and literally watching the militarization of the border play out as like a fifth grade kid and not understanding what was taking place and so or the why of what was happening. And so my parents like very much instilled in me like education and and I got to college and I learned the vocabulary, right? Yeah. I learned how to analyze power, how to analyze social movements and how if you don't have access to money or privilege, if you organize enough people, you can actually change things. And so I've really dedicated my life to those lessons that my parents instilled in me. And so like I did a lot of organizing for many years in in different social movements, most often times with people who were coming from marginalized communities, yeah. whether that was immigrant communities, whether that was working class people, mm-hmm. whether that was young people. Yep. And at the end of the day, the idea was, like, let's balance the scales of power. Yeah. Let's take and let's build our own power. And then in 2018, I was elected to the state Senate.
Yeah.
And so just finished my second legislative session. Wow. And it's been, like, I'm actually kind of surprised by, like, the emotion in my voice right now because it's been rough.
Yeah, yeah.
Watching the ways in which institutions have totally been willing to, like, set aside different communities,
yeah,
and not even take communities into consideration,
yeah,
you know, all I can do is, like, use the position that I have yeah. to do the work and to show up and to fight for community. And so, like, so that's what I've been doing. And it's such a honor and such a privilege to be able to do the work.
Yeah.
The very, very exhausting work and, like, yeah. Important work of, like, creating space for people who often haven't been involved in politics
right.
to do that,
yeah.
Especially in this moment
yeah.
of yeah. navigating multiple crises, yeah. That work feels really important and really yeah. Urgent. And yeah. so it's been, it's, so that's me.
Yeah. And I so appreciate your vulnerability in that, because I think that you're holding so much tension in terms of wanting to hold space, right, for community and be able to be a person who can continue to be a voice, and then also navigating a really challenging space that is fundamentally structured to continue to marginalize those voices.
What has been so so frustrating about our politics right now is the way in which we've become so divided
yeah.
and so polarized.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we talk about trauma
yeah.
and we talk about the ways that it shows up individually, the ways that it shows up collectively,
yes,
the way that it shows up for community,
yep.
You know, that is, sorry.
Don't be sorry.
I totally wasn't expecting this.
No, I love it. This is real. Yeah.
What is fascinating about the ways in which what is hard right now about the ways that community is experiencing all of this trauma, both individually and collectively, is that we're navigating a lot.
Yeah.
Whether that is fear about losing your home, whether yeah. that is fear about getting sick,
yeah.
Whether that is fear about finally having that conversation, that difficult conversation about race,
yeah.
Or having that conversation and it not going the way that you'd hoped, right? Right. Like, there's so much there,
yeah.
And what feels hard about this moment is that we have a government, a system that is exploiting that. That
yeah.
is pouring salt in the wounds, that right. is actively exacerbating the polarization of community, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I see it in community. I see people turning and getting into, like, whether it's Facebook fights or, like, other social media fights,
yeah.
whether it's, like, people playing out, and even within families, even within my own family, you know,
yeah.
people who have one difference of opinion, and because we are deeply isolated right now, are unable to remember what it is that actually connects us and what it is that actually unites us.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you or your company are looking to jump into the podcast world, now is the time. The Plug Agency is here to connect you to the full power of podcasting. You just record and leave the rest to us. The people are listening and want to hear from you. Theplug-agency.com. That's theplug-agency.com. Click the link in the episode description for an exclusive offer.
Yeah. It's easier to focus on the difference right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that isolation in itself will bring up all of our own traumas and all of the ways that we start to respond in these spaces, right? I think when we're in a trauma response, we're responding out of fear and confusion and uncertainty, it polarizes us even more.
One of the things that in the political work right now is actually just bearing witness to the pain that's playing out in community, whether that is the pain around gentrification and the loss of a sense of a neighborhood of literally like a community, whether that is talking about and bearing witness to the families who have been ripped apart given the broken immigration system, whether it is you know, talking about people whose lives on both sides of perpetrator and survivor within the criminal justice system, and just listening and just creating space to like have the conversation. That has been, I think, really empowering for not me, because it's not my lived experience, but for the people who are experiencing those issues, to then create to find a space, to find someone who can who we can struggle alongside, to then try to figure out, okay, well, what do we do out of that? This is a nice conversation, but what are we going to do?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's where the policy and that's where the politics comes in.
You know?
Yeah. And in some ways, like, we got to get through this election, this moment, this political moment. I know, like, you know, people will always say, we have to, this is the most important election, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But this one, I really actually think is.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I never actually, I never saw myself in politics. Yeah. I never saw, myself running for, much less holding elected office. And now that I'm here, it's like, okay, what can I do? What good can I do using the time that I've got?
Yeah.
You know, making ICE's life more difficult, dismantling that system, and unelecting Donald Trump, like, that's a huge piece of it for me right now.
Yeah.
And then the state level policy work that we can move forward to advance, you know, justice in people's everyday lives, like, that to me is the work. That's that's the response. To the multiple traumas that community's navigating in this moment.
So this podcast was born out of this idea that women of color particularly hold this dichotomy, right? Both personally and professionally, that, you know, both our lived experience and the challenges that we face based on, you know, our either our young developmental experiences that we do or do not understand, or our educational experiences, right? how we navigate those spaces, how we navigate professional spaces. Mm-hmm. So I would love for you to speak more to that. When you think about that dichotomy, you know, which I think that you are articulating and you hold, I think, very well, right? Staying firm in the things that you value and that drive you and move you forward, and then knowing that you're working in a system that's fundamentally flawed. Mm-hmm. But I would just love to hear from your perspective what that's like for you.
There are days when it's awesome, and there are days when it's awful. Yeah. There are days when I'm like, I love this work. Like, we were able to like pass this policy, and I don't care whether or not anybody ever recognizes that, you know, I did it, because like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I do care that there would be more opportunity, fewer barriers for people to thrive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's days where it's like, yes, like this is awesome. This is what it, this is why I do the work. There's also times where it's just like, where you realize like, bureaucracy and government is complicated and hard, and mm-hmm. someone will come to me and ask, for me to fix something that I don't have the ability to do.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. If it's an immigration issue, if it's a city issue, what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's hard. And yeah. it's so hard to tell folks that, like, thank you for coming to me, but actually, like, let me direct you to the right person.
Yeah.
And so in the moment, like, right now, I'm the only Latina in the state Senate.
Yeah.
And only the seventh that has ever been elected.
Yeah.
And since Colorado was founded in like, I don't know when it was, 1876, mm-hmm. right? And that's a damn shame.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, right.
And there is a sense of responsibility and like a yeah. sense of... well, you got to show up and you got to be on your A game. And that's something that is not unique to politics, right? That mm-hmm. I feel like mm-hmm. all people of color, all people from marginalized identities, when you show up and you're like, okay, mm-hmm. whether that's navigating imposter syndrome, whether that's navigating... am I enough?
Yeah.
You still have to show up.
Yeah.
You still have to do the work.
Yeah.
And so there's sometimes where it's amazing and there's sometimes when it's hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And those moments when you feel the hardness of it, I mean, it seems as though, I completely agree and I think resonate with that sense of having to show up, right? And even if you're feeling a tremendous amount of anxiety or like uncertainty or distress internally, you can't let that show, because the responsibility that comes with being a representative for your community, or feeling like as a woman of color having the responsibility of showing up in a different way, right? So that you feel like you won't be questioned. And those are the ways that I think about it. I would love for you to speak more about how you manage the hardness of all of that. Like, what are the ways that help you get through those moments?
It's in this political moment that we find ourselves in right now, I feel like, strength and, hardness is, yeah. What is celebrated, is what is championed,
yeah.
right? Like, oh, like, oh, that person so-and-so is such a badass, or oh, that person
yeah.
doesn't take no shit, or like, you know, what have you.
Right.
And even in some ways, Trump, like, very much champions that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I will, I'm strong, and, you know, whoever it is weak.
Right.
And when you think about it, when I was kind of stepped back from that, that means that in that analysis or in that frame of mind, strength is power and weakness is vulnerability.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I actually don't hold that. I don't believe that to be true. I think like that that being vulnerable.
Yeah.
That like I cry all the time, so it's like whatever. That like holding the space.
Yeah.
That's where people can say like, oh.
Yeah.
I didn't understand where you were like you were coming from with that.
Yeah.
Years and years and years ago, when we were first working on like the campaign to what was it? The campaign to allow undocumented high school students to pay in state tuition.
Yeah.
We gave every single fact and figure and statistic and, you know, economic rationale and like all these educational reasons. And politicos kind of looked blankly and were like, but I don't have immigrants in my district.
Right.
And it was like, wow. Okay. Let us expand your perspective on that.
Yeah.
But it was actually people coming forward and sharing their own stories.
Yeah.
And them coming forward and being vulnerable and saying, hey, this is me and I need this bill and I need you to take this action.
Yeah.
There was so much power in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could not be ignored.
Yeah.
And that I think is actually what will get us through all of this.
Yeah.
Is like actually building those connections of being vulnerable.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think there's strength in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. And I do think that in that dichotomy of I have to show up in this way in order to be understood, seen, heard, right? Like I have to be the badass. I have to be strong. I can't show any, you know, cracks or chinks in the armor. Doesn't really allow people of color to live in their full humanity, right? That our capacity to be vulnerable and to live in our vulnerability actually is the strength that allows us to live in our fullness as opposed to feel like we have to be in this this constant tension for ourselves mm-hmm. around I have to hold this in order to be accepted or to be seen as valuable.
It's so real. And I think when I, you know, I'll get caught up in whatever political battle of the day that it is, and I kind of zoom out from it, and then I'm like, wait a second, like, is this little political whatever it is going to lead to more people thriving in my community or not?
Right.
Because if it's not, I'm good off of it.
Yeah.
You know, and like finding, I'll throw down on those battles where it does matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's come with some time to figure out how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to, when I first got in, I was paralyzed. I was like, I don't know what did I just get myself into?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As I learned, I kind of went on to the opposite direction where I was like jumping into all of the battles.
Yeah.
Why? Because like, why not? Like, there's battles to be fought.
Right.
And then now, like, sort of finding a middle ground where it's like that picking and choosing what things are petty and minor and will not make deep lasting change in what things actually will.
Yeah.
And then really trying to focus my energy towards that, which oftentimes means doing the stuff that is politically harder, mm-hmm. because the easy stuff is, you know, it's easy.
Right.
It's politically shiny. And
right.
And it's easier to get done. Mm-hmm. The hard stuff is what actually, what people really need,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So that's the sort of the way that I try to navigate, this moment.
Yeah. So I want to know more about your growing up, and how that helped you in to come to this moment, right? I know that obviously it's like those experiences that you're able to point to and say these things shaped me. But I'd love to hear more about just your process growing up, the ways that you have drawn from your experiences in your family and your community.
It's so funny because especially right now where we're all kind of in quarantine, right? I grew up first on the San Carlos Apache Reservation from when I was born until I was 8. My dad was a ranch manager, and he managed the cattle association, 5 different like really big ranches for the San Carlos Apache tribe. Mm. My mom was an elementary school teacher, and so growing up there, and understanding that I was not Apache and I wasn't white, but I wasn't either,
yeah.
but I didn't have a vocabulary as to like Chicano identity or like
yeah.
even Mexican American identity or anything like that. And then moving to the border mm-hmm. in South Texas, my dad got a job managing a different ranch. And this time we actually lived like on the ranch. And so I was like 30 miles from town.
Wow.
And so we were there from the time I was 10 until I graduated high school. And so I joke now with my husband about being in quarantine, and like I'm like generally okay with it because I was very used to, like, as a kid, as like a middle schooler, a high schooler, finding ways to be alone and be okay with mm-hmm. being alone, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I think that my conceptions around power,
yeah,
and access mm-hmm. and community were all very much formulated through those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting to see, like, even within my own family, how those different lessons have played out, right?
Yeah.
Who went to college, who didn't,
yeah.
who has a quote unquote professional job, who doesn't,
yeah.
How folks navigate space.
Yeah.
I mean, literally even being like in a city, for one of my brothers, he's just like, I'll come to Denver like once every 3 years, but like uh-huh. that's about it.
The big city.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, no. For my oldest brother, like Pueblo is like a lot, you know, like he's like, I could do Pueblo, but like Denver.
Yeah.
And so, and that's all very much rooted in a sort of the ways that we grew up.
Yeah. And in that, knowing that, like, moving from a kind of smaller, more insular community, and then going off to university, and obviously that was a time that shaped your, you know, your capacity to conceptualize all of these things that you'd been thinking about for so long in terms of your own experience. What was that transition like for you?
Oh, it was a punch in the jaw, you know.
Yeah.
It was such deep culture shock.
Yeah.
Everybody had talked about, you know, the East Coast being, Texas is so friendly, and like the East Coast, they're so cold. and actually experiencing that and being at Yale, which was such a white institution, mm-hmm. You know, 75 years older than the United States, yeah. you know, and there was such deep rooted legacies of actual power.
Yeah.
The year I started my freshman year in April 2001, you know, and so when 9/11 happened,
yeah.
It was it really shaped and transformed, you know, my life. And and that was one piece, yeah. right, of like me being like, oh, I wait a second, I really want, why are we doing this? Why are we going to war? What's going to happen to my family? What's going to happen to my community? What's going to happen to my you know, college roommates and people in my residential college and what have you? But then also it's trying to navigate work study, trying to navigate college life,
yeah.
all of the things as like a working class person. And and then my junior year of college, my mom passed away pretty suddenly.
Yeah.
Totally like unexpected. And the question then became like, do I still want to participate?
Yeah.
Or not?
Yeah.
Oh, it was rough.
No. Yeah.
I had this conversation with my dad and was like, well, should I do, should I like, you know, take a semester off?
Yeah.
And should I like, what should we like, let me like help you, like let's figure out life, like whatever. And my dad was like, no, like your mom would have wanted you to go to school.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, okay. So I went back to school, and it was like, I remember this very clearly, like sitting down with my academic advisor, who was like super, super East Coast, super, just think of your stereotypical, like, you know, Yale professor guy, because yeah. that was him.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, so you've had 2 weeks, so you're good now, right? Mm. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured it out, got straight A's that semester,
yeah.
like crushed it
yeah.
in a lot of ways. And I think a lot about that time because I don't ascribe it only to Yale.
Yeah.
But I do ascribe that to power.
Yeah.
Where power yeah. wants to flatten out
yeah.
Individuality, wants to flatten out vulnerability, wants to flatten out any little wrinkle
yeah.
In order to produce whatever it is.
Right.
Whether it's college graduates, whether it is widgets, whether it is mm-hmm. destructive policy, whatever, right? Like
right.
that's how power works.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to like unpackage that
yeah.
and to say, okay, no, I reject that.
Yeah.
But if I am going to participate in X, Y, or Z structure, I am going to do it in a way that feels like authentic and real and yeah. worthwhile.
Yeah.
And so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that just the way that you are able to understand that for yourself now, that moment of, you know, almost dismissing the grief, dismissing that the impact for you. And to be focused on productivity, right? That this idea that we have to be productive and that grief is just this blip and that we can just keep going and we don't have to acknowledge or recognize it. And that is what continues to allow those power structures to function. But that grief in itself is so important and so meaningful in terms of our ability to be able to grow and learn and understand ourselves and understand how we are in relationship to other people.
Absolutely. And I think that we, like, as a society, we don't talk about it. We don't acknowledge it. We don't acknowledge vulnerability. We don't. It's not in our nature to, it's not in this, late capitalistic American society, it's not accepted to talk about that pain.
Right, right.
And when you actually stop and think about it, and when we sort of break that down and break down those walls that we put up in our own families or in our own selves, and start to talk about those feelings, those sentiments, like those, that loss.
Yeah.
That's, that, there's power in that. There is tremendous opportunity to think about how to move forward in a different way. And so I've tried to, you know, in my own life, in my own work, to show up and to listen to that for my own self. And I've also tried to find ways to apply that to the movement work that I do. There is, for like six, almost 7 years, I served as a paralegal to immigrants who were navigating a deeply broken immigration system. Knowing that I was asking people to recite trauma, right? You get me in a room and man, I just tell you.
I love it. I love it. It's so good. So you were talking about noticing for yourself.
And so I served as a paralegal to immigrants who were navigating a lot of trauma, a deeply broken immigration system, and my work as a paralegal was to document that trauma in a way, not just to document the trauma, but to document it in a way that the government would understand and care about. And so I had to be very intentional about what questions I asked, what questions I didn't ask, and then to make sure to capture it in a way that as I'm, you know, transcribing documents, as I'm translating documents, all of these things, to translate that in a way that would give voice to the vulnerability, to the pain, the grief, the fear, whatever emotion that person was feeling in that moment. And so that was, I learned a lot there, where it's like, it's very clearly, it's not about me. It is about centering the person, you know, on the other side of the table. And it is figuring out how to do whatever possible in order to help them win their case and move on with their life and be, you know, just get on with the rest of their life and not to have to navigate this this broken system anymore.
Right. Did it feel like that was an awakening for you as well in terms of your own process, like starting to break down those walls for yourself internally around being a more open to your own vulnerability?
In some ways, yes. And then in other ways, it actually, like, I felt like I had to build up different walls in order to not carry all of that guilt and trauma and emotion home. So in some ways, absolutely, because it was connecting the anger I felt, the rage, the fury about how dare we, yeah, as like this country, as you know, this system, this society, treat other people in such a callous manner.
Yeah, yeah.
You can only organize off of that for so long.
Yeah.
You can only participate in movement off of that pure rage, mm-hmm, for so long. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you burn yourself out.
Yeah.
And that actually was really important. It was doing that work. It was showing up. It was being intentional. It was being very focused and driven, right, mm-hmm, to do right by the clients we served, that helped me in my own process figure out what are the ways that I can heal myself and what, yeah, are the ways to use those emotions that I'm feeling, you know, in a positive way to build.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah.
Because we can all be angry, and anger is a very powerful emotion. But at least for me, like, at a certain point, I burn myself out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to have something that's like exciting to build off of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost, I talk about this all the time. That, you know, our emotions are our greatest motivators. They're the things that fuel us, right? And it's so easy to cut them off or dissociate from them. It's another thing to find access to the whole, array of emotions that we have in order to fuel us, rather than be constricted to one emotion, mm-hmm, or to feel like I can't have any other emotions or allow myself to be in a range of emotions because they feel scary or uncertain, or I don't know what to do with them. And I think that your ability to be able to open yourself up to feeling and understanding how that does not only fuel your work, but allows you to be sustainable in your work.
It is. Yeah, it's important. And mm-hmm, I also think that that we are in this moment where it's easier to not there's so many competing forces within society that, mm-hmm, are saying, don't care, the system's broken, it's not worth fighting for, just burn it all down. Mm-hmm. And you know what? So there's days where I'm like right there with you.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Where I'm like, yeah, it is really broken. Except that we're starting to see what that society would look like.
Yeah.
If we give up and stop fighting.
Yeah.
Like literally fascist in the street, like secret police and quite frankly, the secret police that have been conducting ICE raids in communities, yep, for years.
Right.
The new level of outrage now that it's taking place with American citizens. If we don't fight back, if we don't build a vision where, you know, people are treated with dignity and respect, and like, then what is then the world that we will live in will be a very dark and scary place, you know?
Yeah.
And so it is, I think, important to participate in that, in the building, in the, even though it's hard and even though it's like complicated, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, you ask for 10, you settle for 7 and then you end up with 4, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, and you, at a certain point you're like, oh, was it even worth it? I still ultimately think that it is.
Yeah.
And I do think that a part of the work also is to not have it all be on one person, to not have it be all on the quote-unquote figureheads, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That you actually build power by spreading out, and by organizing more people to participate in all aspects of social movements inside the Capitol and outside of it, to, you know, I mentioned I'm the only, right now I'm the only Latina in the state Senate. That's going to change, right? Like, one of my colleagues is moving over from the House to the Senate. We're hoping to grow our Latino caucus because that's become a place where we can be honest and be vulnerable and strategize alongside one another and figure out how to show up for our communities. And that's been really powerful and really exciting. And that's the stuff that gives me hope, you know?
Absolutely. So I would love for you to talk about resilience. So again, the premise of this podcast is overcoming trauma and becoming resilient. And I would love to know what that means to you.
To me, overcoming trauma is that there is a power in that. And that resilience is that power. And being able to treat oneself with grace. And being able to experience the good and the bad, and to roll with the punches, and and to still show up. That is resilience. I think a lot about, you know, previous generations, right? Like our ancestors, like the people who watched as like land was taken away, the people who fought back against, you know, the worst atrocities within, you know, within our history, slavery, the Holocaust, and it makes, and I often think about what would they say about this moment? And so to me, like, resilience is being able, is also trying to, in a way, to, resilience is taking those lessons from the past and trying to figure out ways to learn from those, to figure out new pathways forward as well.
Being able to use our ancestors as guides and knowing that they, in a sense, were resilient and we can build on that resilience. And having access to all of the ways that we feel, right? Good and bad. And be gracious with ourselves in that.
It's been, it's always a work in progress, right? And I think that, there is so much, that we are experiencing, right now, whether it's, you know, again, it's like, I feel like I'm like repeating myself, but it's so true for me in this moment of the economic anxiety, the pandemic itself, and all of these questions around structural racism. How we respond to that, if we just say, oh, well, let's have an interpersonal conversation to us and think that that's going to resolve a structural flaw within the system or a structural aspect of the system. Okay, that's one thing. It won't. At the same time, I also think that there's like real power in choosing to step away from, you know, and to take care of oneself and to say, you know what, like, I'm not going to participate in X, Y, or Z rally or this, that, or the other, or whatever campaign or this, that. I'm going to actually go and grow a garden. Right? Like that can be as transformative and as, in some ways radical, as anything else, you know? And, I think being open to that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were talking about experiencing the full range of emotions. Mm-hmm. And I think about it in terms of experiencing all of the different tactics in the ways in which we quote unquote like show up for ourselves and for community. And those things matter. Yeah. Those things matter deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Thank you so much for being here with me. This was so good.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah.
This is like a really beautiful space. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll probably have you back. I swear I'm having everyone back because I could have I could talk to everyone for hours. You all don't know.
Well, I'd love that. What you're doing here is really important. So thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for your good work. I always appreciate all the work that you've done.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Okay. We'll talk soon.
Down for my soul, y'all. Yeah, for your soul, y'all. This ain't a theory, really. This ain't something that I made up. I like to believe it's not fucking selfish. Like,
I'm Marisol Solar Durlacher. As a trauma expert who's worked in the field for almost 20 years, I'm transitioning from clinical practice to offering workshops, training, and coaching to mid-sized companies, organizations, and nonprofits. I partner with companies and organizations who are interested in building the resilience of their staff and empowering them regarding their mental health and well-being. If this is you, reach out to me so we can start a conversation about how I can help. If you know someone who might be interested, feel free to pass along this information. You can find more at my website, and the link can be found in the show notes. Again, as always, thank you so much for listening.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.